Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the History of Alchemy podcast. My name is Travis Dow.
And I'm Pete Coleman for the Bohemican podcast.
So today we're going to talk about, again, I'm not sure about the pronunciation, Austenes?
Let's go with Austenes.
Austenes?
Yeah.
That sounds like it's plausibly correct. I don't know. Send us an email if you know, by the way. We'll go with Austenes.
But pretty much like the pronunciation of his name, we also don't know exactly when he was born.
Yeah.
There's a lot lost to history here
right.
with this guy.
We don't know when he was born, but he died in... No, I don't know that either. Oh, but he was probably Iranian or Persian. And again, the reason we don't know so much about him is because there's a couple of theories here. He's either one person that lived 700 years, or there are different wise philosophers by that name, which could have been a very common Persian name. So we'll kind of break it down from earliest to latest. I think that's how I broke it down. But Hermodorus, who lived in the 4th century BC, mentions him, okay? And Hermodorus circulated works of Plato in Sicily. So that's where one mention comes from. He claimed that Austenes was a magi in a long line of magi descending from Zoroaster, okay? Zarathustra, if you will. But now Persian sources don't mention him. So we only have him from Greek sources, and he's one of the wise foreigners that the Greeks just loved so much, okay? In 1st century CE, Pliny the Elder called Zoroaster the first magician, but that Austenes was the first writer of it. So this is already 400 years later, and we get a mention of Pliny the Elder, right?
Yeah, a lot of you might have heard of Pliny the Elder and Pliny the Younger. Pliny the Elder was actually a naval and army commander of the Roman legions, or of a Roman area that was lost at the explosion of Pompeii and Herculaneum that was covered by Mount Vesuvius.
Yeah.
So he lost his life trying to make it towards the beach. Pliny the Younger was able to recount what happened on that horrible day in the 1st century.
Yeah.
destroyed quite a bit and made a lot of damage. So, you know, going back to Pliny the Elder, he was, a pretty learned man. He actually went out and he knew a lot about what was going on, especially in Greek life. So besides his military conquests, he actually had a pretty good hold on what was going on with cultural issues and science.
Yeah. And in particular, I mean, regarding Austenes, he also wrote that, and even with one historian like Pliny, he wrote that he accompanied Xerxes to the invasion of Greece, but then he also mentions him as the tutor, or one of the tutors, of Alexander the Great, which was like a century later, okay?
Yes, yeah, so that doesn't really make a lot of sense on that issue, does it?
And this was like one guy writing about, you know, so hard to say. And then when Democritus headed east to discover the secret of magic, it was none other than Austenes that was his teacher. So, you know, Austenes was clearly all over the place. I'll give you one Pliny quote here. And so he says, quote, "As Austenes said, there are several different kinds of it. He professes to divine, divina promittit, from water, globes, air, stars, lamps, basins, and axes, and by many other methods, and besides to converse with ghosts and those in the underworld." So this is the reputation that Austenes had according to Pliny. So already, you know, larger than life figure. By the end of the 1st century CE, Austenes is cited as an authority on alchemy, necromancy, divination, all kinds of, you know, mystical properties of plants and stones. He's quoted as a master of all these things.
Well, that does help when you have some guy like Pliny the Elder being able to back you up as a member of Roman elite, that if he's going to say, you know, you did these things, not only are you going to get remembered, you're going to probably be written down in some sort of text by you know, Romans scribes. So that was probably the best thing that could have been done for his Austenitis sort of background, was to be quoted and remembered by Pliny the Elder,
regardless of who he really was. Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Yeah. So later, when the Muslim world kind of took over the study of alchemy, and you know, got their hands on all these Greek sources, they continued to see Austenitis as a father of alchemy. And now they actually thought that he possessed the secret of the philosopher's stone. Now the Arabic world takes over again, along with Persians, and so now Persians do mention him, but from Greek sources. So around 700 AD, let's say, more or less, Persian literature now mentioned Austenitis, that he lived, but they give a huge range from like 300 BC up to almost 700 AD. And again,
we just don't know.
They might have been talking about different people. They might have been talking about the same person and just really mistranslated.
So let's take us now to somewhere in the 3rd century. We jump on over to Egypt, and the Egyptian philosopher Pevekius writes a Zoroastrian magician that he had found just a treasure trove of stuff, books that were hidden, that were written supposedly by Austenitis in Persian. All right, so if you can imagine that these books were stashed in 7 different doorways of the king, and each of these 7 books were hidden there, so that you can actually find this treasure trove that is in the Persian language, so that can be dated back to that time and that region. Perbeckius, in great awe, you can imagine his jaw just drops to the floor, describing that these books, that Austenitis's divine revelations, were a treatise of the whole of all sciences you can imagine, including that of wisdom of Hermes, which Austenitis had recovered and restored from the Magi to the world. So he basically brought it from the darkness of that no one would ever find to the light of day, in Persian nonetheless. Now, how do we know that this is connected to this time that he might have lived in Persia? Well, we also know that Pevekius was writing to Osram a letter of his findings. So that's how we kind of know that, or we have a suspicion that at the time that this would have taken place in Persia at this era. So we can start at least get a time frame that Austenitis was known at the time. Yeah. Right. So folks, this is really kind of in the midst of the fog of history. So, you know, it's hard to kind of pinpoint where he would be, but we're talking again the 3rd century.
Yeah, and right? He's quoted an awful lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cuz I have another third century mention, and that's Cyprian, who was the bishop of Carthage at the time, again in the 3rd century. He states that Austenitis said God cannot be perceived, and Hermes Trismegistus said God cannot be comprehended by humans. So this is just, you know, a little quip by the Bishop of Carthage that mentions these two great kind of mystical thinkers. So it's just interesting that, you know, people talk about him all the time, and this is, you know, from 400 BC to 300 AD. So
let me get this right. So far, Austenitis has been brought up by a 1st century Roman general, right, and Pliny the Elder, and then also the Cyprian Bishop of Carthage, no small guy, is bringing him up again.
In the 3rd century.
So there must be some gravitas to this name that people want to attach to their documents or their words, their sayings.
Well, yes. So I know we jumped all over the place. So let me tell you what we have so far. So we have Austenitis, okay? He may have taught Democritus. He may have been in Xerxes' court. He may have taught Alexander the Great, and he taught pseudo Democritus, because they're not the same person. So whoever he was, you know, he must have been a pretty clever guy. And again, even though he's so murky, the reason we wanted to cover him, even if it's, you know, kind of a short episode, is that supposedly he was the first to talk about divine water, as in the elixir of life. So the very first to bring it up. And really, you know, to be the first to mention the elixir of life, that deserves a podcast. So here you have it. I think we're at less than 10 minutes right now. But if we knew more, we would mention it. But yeah, just keep that in mind when you invent that time machine. Please write me who he actually was, whether he was five people or Persian or what he was. And yeah, that's all we have. So thanks for listening.
Thanks. Take care.
You've been listening to the History of Alchemy podcast with Travis Dow and Pete Coleman. For more information about this episode, other episodes, and other information about alchemy, alchemists, and related subjects, visit historyofalchemy.com. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, review, and don't forget to rate us. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments, ideas, and corrections to podcast@historyofalchemy.com or get in touch via Facebook on the History of Alchemy podcast page or Twitter @AlchemyPodcast. Tune in to our sister podcast all about the Czech Republic, Bohemicon, which is also available on iTunes or on Bohemicon.com. Until next time on the History of Alchemy podcast, thank you for listening.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.